Dining with Jesus in Luke, a study of a book by Eugene Olavinjir. I don't know how to pronounce his name. That's as close as I can get. If you've got better French, I don't know, because I guess he is lives in this country. Then we'll be chatting about the book mainly. And it's really a study of the origins of the Eucharist in the Gospel according to Luke, and we'll be talking about that. So in distinction from what a dear friend in the Bible study hour is doing, he's doing biblical theology. We'll probably be doing a little more of dogmatic or doctrinal theology. We'll be talking about some doctrines. But it will be in the midst of the Gospel of St. Luke. Yeah.
I would be happy to run and get some copies of the Bibles if you wanted to use them.
Yes, why don't you? We won't be dealing deeply in, but we will be using
it. You want to refer to it?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks.
Any particular translation you refer to? RSV, New RSV?
We have both. In RSV, if they have it, but that's what I have. But fine. First of all, let's get a little acquainted. I think I've met some of you and some I have not. I'm Elmer Witt. I live in Tacoma, Washington. On Sunday last, I celebrated my 50th anniversary of being ordained in the Lutheran ministry. Quietly, I might add, celebrated it. And I had parish ministry in California a long time ago, and then I was in mostly in administrative work for the church. I was youth director of Missouri Synod for 15 years, I think it was. I forgot, I'd have to subtract, and I'm not good at this. And then I was in campus ministry for quite a while, and my last post was serving as director here at Holden Village from 83 to 88. Father of five kids, lost my first wife to cancer a month before I came to Holden, and I lost my youngest daughter in an automobile accident again while I was here, and their remains are in a lovely sacred place right up that way from here. I remarried 5 years ago so that I could somehow be related to Mark Schmidt, who is here in the village as operations manager at the present time. Not really so, but he's the one who gave me my cap anyway. I appreciate that. I'm delightfully retired since 88. I just love it, especially the rolling over in bed in the morning. Just my wife is considerably younger than I am, so she's up at 5:10 to go walking and leaving at 6:40. One of the most delicate things in the world is to learn how to roll over without insulting your spouse. I keep working at it. Been coming up here since before it opened. I was here in 60, I think either late 60 or 61, I forget which it was. And I've been on teaching staff about 28 times since I've been here, since the early days. As youth director of the Missouri Synod, I was able to scrunch some of their money over this way early on, and Missouri Synod is very proud of that now. Even at that time, they didn't know that they were doing it. We were glad to be a part of that. If you don't mind, I just wander for a while. I'll get into Luke in just a moment. Those are really the good old days. In inter-Lutheran work between all the synods, there were like 84 or 400, I forget how many were there, 70, I think, if I recall. And we all met together regularly. And my predecessor at the Wall Committee at that time sought to it that the building that he had discovered, that the building they built for the Wall Committee headquarters in Chicago was not labeled or in stone, Walther League headquarters. It was called the Lutheran Youth Building. It was specifically designed that all of the Lutherans would have their headquarters for youth ministry in that building. This is 1942 or 43, long time ago. We met annually, we planned things together. Their staff would be, come and be on our staff, we'd send people to be on their staff. We loved those days, and maybe we were spoiled by that, but I don't know. So that's why many of us banded together, because Carol Hendrick had been in youth ministry before we came up here, and so those of us who knew him through youth ministry, you know, came along with our buddy and spent a lot of time here. Enough of that. I want to ask you, how many of you here, this group are here for the Luther Hostel? Oh, all right, great, good. I think it's already been announced, or going to be announced, that they mentioned about the book Mary Through the Centuries, and I'm the one to teach that, and I did teach it last week, but I'm going to do a reprise of it tomorrow night, Wednesday night, at 6:20, if people are interested in catching up with that. There are tapes of the 5 sessions we had last week, and this week I'm doing the review of this book instead. Just so you know, I'm not a scholar about Mary at all. I started reading the book just because a classmate of mine wrote it, Jaroslav Pelikan, and got interested in that way, and I spent about 6 weeks in the book. So that's the level of my information and wisdom about Mariology and the teaching of the church. Obviously, if you're drinking from Dr. Pelikan, you get a good draft. I'm by no means an expert, but I am interested in it. And then we reviewed the Newsweek article about Mary that maybe some of you saw out there. Now, to Luke. This Roman Catholic scholar, Eugene Delverre, is doing is pointing out that most of us Christians, and even in the Roman Catholic Church, felt that the Eucharist was something added to the story of Jesus or the Gospel. That the central message of, obviously, of the Christian Church is the story about Jesus Christ and his life and his suffering and death, and of course, especially his resurrection. And the way we treat what we call sacraments, or what good friend Dr. Martin Luther decided on his own, that's a Lutheran way of doing things, you decide it on your own, to define a sacrament. I've said about 7 times since I've been here, I wish he would have included some more. As long as he's going to define it, he might as well define it broadly. He could have. But those are added, something added to. Here's the gospel story, and now remember baptism will bring this in, and remember the Lord's Supper will bring this in. And this book is saying, not so. The Eucharist, and that's the term I'll be using, for Lord's Supper or Holy Communion, however. Eucharist is simply the Greek word for giving thanks. Eucharizo is, we give thanks. The Eucharist is a gospel event. It is part of the way, for instance, and that's why we're looking at Luke. Luke told the story about Jesus Christ through gospel events, many of which were meals. And all along the line, he's hinting that the eating together and what happens when you do that is part of how the gospel is lived out. And we'll look at 4 of those during this week. I'll give you in a moment, I'll give you an outline of all the eating events. And we'll look at those. Eugene says, one of the big mistakes we made was when somebody started talking about the institution of the Lord's Supper. He says, that's not a biblical word. Jesus didn't institute anything. It started way back, probably 5th, 6th century they started talking about things, so never before that. And sort of it was like, what they did then is, he lived his whole life, and then way at the end, he instituted the Lord's Supper. He said, that's a really poor way of looking at it. The whole of his life was about meals, according to Luke now, and journeys. He was traveling and he was eating. And what happened around all of that was the gospel story. I'll say this somewhere during the week, so I might as well get it out of the way right now. I'm struggling with St. Paul at the moment. Now, when I say at the moment, it's probably the last 12 years or something like that. Not because there's anything wrong with Paul. But I think, and I'll speak only for the Lutheran Church, and only because I know it, and I'm not speaking in its behalf, but what I know about it, is that we're so hung up on Paul, mostly because of Martin Luther, that we really don't spend, in my opinion, enough time in the Gospels. I think the tradition of the Church was, when they gathered, somebody told the story of Jesus Christ, life, suffering, death, resurrection. And then somebody else said, hey, we got this letter from Paul. Let's read Paul, too. But it was always in the context of the story. What bothers me, and Martin was pushed in that direction because of his terrible interest in doctrine and teaching, too, as a good teacher, that it, we have become focused on the doctrines, mostly of Paul. And Paul was steeped in the story, but when he writes to people, he doesn't always recall all of that. Early on in youth ministry, I met some youth leaders from Germany and asked them, well, how do you do stuff over there and all that kind of thing, as they were asking us. And they said, oh, we always start with the gospel story. That's the way we try to get kids to be interested, to be sure they can tell the story. And then I recall that after my parish ministry days in California, Barstow, California, I love the desert yet. My first teaching of confirmation class was, well, if not a total disaster, probably almost a total disaster. Just, it didn't go. The kids very quickly got in trouble. One was in a federal institution. The other two very good-looking young women got pregnant quickly before they were even old enough to be whatever. So, you know, I guess that's why I went into youth ministry, because I could only go uphill from there. But then I started teaching them out of the Gospels. And we spent the first 3 or 4 months till they were able to tell their own gospel story. They could tell, not perfectly, not accurately, well, not who's accurate anyway, whether Matthew, Luke, Mark, or Mark, whoever, but they could tell the story of Jesus Christ, their own version. And then we started talking about doctrines and how they fit into the life and death and resurrection of Jesus. Frankly, that worked a lot better. I don't mean it worked perfectly. I own my own version of confirmation today is one Christian adult being seriously interested in a younger person. And if that happens, it's usually a good confirmation class. They will remember somebody who took them seriously. Their thoughts, their needs, whatever else. If that person is overtly Christian, you ain't going to get over that in a lifetime. So, that's what the book is about. It's related to meals and journeys. It has to do with hospitality. That's what is happening at the meal, just as at those meals along the line, was a form of hospitality. When Jesus was invited to Levi or Pharisees or wherever he was going, or to Mary and Martha's house, there was hospitality going on. And Eugene, I'm using his first name because I don't want to try to say his last name all the time. I don't know him, so I'm being presumptuous. But Eugene keeps saying that the Eucharist then is the supreme hospitality. And that's how the story of Jesus Christ is being lived out
as a sign, not that the bread and wine are a sign. No, we believe it's the true body and blood of our Lord. I have no question about that. But the whole of the experience is a sign of the gospel story, especially the hospitality of being together, one, two, and the journey that we're all taking, a la Jesus, taking his journey in his life as well. I don't want to sound like a crab, but what bothers me, what's toughest at Holden is living in community. It's always viewed as a lovely place, and it is. Gosh, I'd come back anytime. Not as director, oh gosh, no. Once is enough. And it was great fun, but once is enough. But before I came, I had on my desk a file marked Living in Christian Community, ? And guess what file I had on my desk after I left? Living in Christian Community, ? It's tough, we're not good at it. It's marvelous. I think it is the missing part of the church today. I don't think the drift away and loads, I don't know how many of you, children or grandchildren, are involved in church. I got 1.5 out of 4. Not that we don't work on it. But I don't think it's so much the more evil in the world. My dad helped me understand there was plenty evil back then. He was in politics, so he had a close view of evil. And a lot of other things, but it is the fact that it doesn't work. That we don't come together, then we are related to one another. When I sit at the table like at breakfast and listen to the kids talking to each other, some of them distant yet, but there's something happening. Lots better, I think, than at coffee break at First Lutheran, lovely Swedish parish, in Tacoma. How do we get together? How do we experience the communion of saints? The fact that we are related to each other. For isn't that, indeed, what Jesus Christ was talking about? You remember, he didn't talk a lot about love. Love your neighbor as yourself and love God, the Father, heart and mind and soul. And the rest of the time he was talking about knowing God, you should know my Father, and the rule of God, the coming together of all creation. And that's the part that I think is the toughest for us. And especially in an individualistic age. My kids, my house, my family, my political party, my church, my, whatever it is. And the our part of it. It's not my pastor, sure he is, but he's our pastor. He does a lot for me, and I'm grateful. And I've let him know. I'm going to be leaving some of these days. I want him around. And that's why I want him giving the forgiveness at the Eucharist, at the service, and also why I want to receive Eucharist from him. Because I'm counting on him to see me through if God gives me that way to go. But he said, he'll do that for me. But that's because he's our pastor. I didn't choose him. I don't know who I would have chosen, but I mean, we all did. But he's ours. How do we get back more to the ours? And that's what Jesus was facing. And the Gospel of Luke was written later, about the year 90. Paul had written about the Eucharist already 30 years before. It was a new idea. So the meal came early. The people were doing that, considerably earlier. But Mark tends to be an agricultural kind of a gospel. Luke is more urban, probably not too far from Jerusalem. And the kind of things they were facing is that people were not getting along with each other. They were trying to beat each other out. And they were certainly, and they had Pharisees in the Christian church. We always talk about the Pharisees being back from there. They had, sure, those Pharisees were still around too. But there were Christian Pharisees, too, people who had joined the church but still thinking that, well, some of us are a little better than the others. Like maybe our families have been members of this congregation longer than others. Or I've got a Scandinavian background, or I've got a German background, or whatever else. Those people are still around in the early church. And Luke tells the story of Jesus so that those people are confronted with what Jesus was about, which was bringing the people back together, including even that women, contrary to the times, were invited in to the dinners. They were not allowed. And Jesus brought them in, and therefore his followers were known as reprobates and immoral people. Who knows what they're doing with those women in there? The meals are two kinds in Luke. One is the old symposia from the early Greek and Roman times. It was a very elaborate, well-prepared and planned meal. They paid great attention to the menu. I'm sure they had a director of food services, right? And they paid careful attention to who was invited. Normally, a guest, a head guest, for whom the honor was given. Jesus once or twice is that head guest at the meals. Not always. But as you could tell from the stories, especially the way Luke tells them, make any difference whether the head guest or not. He was the one who drew all the attention because he was different and because he had something to say that was worthwhile. Then they would eat, usually lying down, of course, as they did in those days, and no wine at that time. You know, talk about getting drunk with these things. That came later, after the meal. Then the wine was served, and then usually the honored guest would give a speech, or a presentation, or raise a question, or the issue, it could have been about an issue beforehand that was announced before. You want to come to our house, we're going to talk about this. And then there would be conversation. And at that time, others would be able to come in, usually people who were not high enough, because these were often in large villas or large wealthy people's homes. People who hadn't been invited could come in at that time. And in sometimes little places, some women would be allowed in. And sometimes in worse places, some young boys, prostitutes, would be allowed in. And who knew what would go on? And I'm talking about the symposia at a range of very high standards and some others. Some of the meals, and we'll look at those in here, were of that kind, where the conversation was very normal because that's what you did at a symposium. The other of the meals are homespun domestic invitations, hospitality. Come over to my house. You come over to your house and we'll sit down and talk. And you'll see a number of those in here too. The easiest example is Jesus at Mary and Martha's house. And we'll see how unusual that is too, again, in terms of women. She owned the house. It was Martha's house, not Mary's house. It was Martha's house. And it wasn't Lazarus. He doesn't show, even. I mean, you assume he's out on the road talking about his resurrection, you know. But the fact that Jesus accepted the invitation of a woman, and that he was there with those women, oh, that's counterculture. It isn't just casual. It was that they were willing to do it, and that Jesus was willing to do it as well. Let me stop there, see if there are any questions about that, then I'll give this up and we'll start talking about it.
I'm curious about how they came to use the word institute in the 5th century. Does he speak about the root of that, or what?
No.
Or is that something that we have assumed in growing with the Eucharist?
Eugene mentions that it started in whatever time, I didn't make a note of that, and it was the first time that he could find that it was used.
And it was the word institute. Jesus institutes this.
Yeah. Hmm. But it isn't biblical, and it isn't early church either, as far as the Beatles. I have not studied that. But his point is, no matter where, since we know it's not biblical, that it's something we can look at and not have to do it. I mean, not have to use it, especially if it doesn't. If we follow what he is saying in here, that Jesus was heading towards that the whole time.
We, in our liturgy, we talk about the words of institution.
Yeah, right.
Just is a curious kind.
We don't have to. Just say, our Lord said, that's enough. You know, we're defining when we say institute, one way or another. And not an evil thing, mm-hmm. but it may contribute to distancing it from the whole of the story, at least according to Jesus. So now. Yes.
Elmer, I was really into what you were saying here about the meals in Luke were two kinds, mm-hmm. and you explained symposia very well with 4 points. We got down to homespun, which is what I'm at, where I'm at with meals, and it was invited by a woman. And did they have a topic too?
No, domestic hospitality, just like inviting them over to your house.
And nothing else, none of this other stuff.
We're deducing from the stories.
Uh-huh.
He knows about symposia. The rest of it was just come over to my house.
But evidently they would do some talking and visiting. Mary went and sat at Jesus'
feet. But not organized. The difference is symposia, organized.
Yeah.
Upper level kinds of folks doing it.
Good.
The other, you come over. And, of course, things will happen.
Sure.
Around food, of course. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Please. Well, let's pass some of these out.
What was the term you used this morning for some kind of Lutherans?
Excuse me?
What was the term you used in the announcements this morning? Tankers, Lutherans, or what was it?
Well, it comes out of the lesson we look at. It's what word did I use?
It's on the board.
Yeah, I know. disreputable.
Oh, disreputable.
Because that's the people who come. Here you see the meal outline, and this is strictly Eugene's outline, of course, that I'm borrowing. And the three meals told in the story of the origins of the church and Jesus' ministry early on. The banquet of Holy Levi, which we'll look at today, the dinner at the home of a Pharisee, breaking of bread in Bethsaida, which is hospitality, the four meals told and on the way to Jerusalem. This is in Luke. But sometimes they move around in the gospel, depending on what the goal of the gospel writer is. And the four meals in here are at Martha's house, noon meal at the Pharisees, third meal, Sabbath meal at the home of the Pharisee, and then Zacchaeus. And the final meal, which is the words of our Lord around the Holy Supper in Luke 22. And then two meals after the death, both of them in the category of domestic hospitality, bringing bread to Emmaus and the entire community in Jerusalem. Why don't you start by, again, if you have scriptures in front of you, why don't you turn to Luke 22. We'll start with that section where Luke inserts in the gospel story the event of initiating the meal that he suggests, that he asks, calls us to keep repeating. So, would you read that from Luke 22, 19 to 20, if someone would, please? Anyone? Preferably somebody can read English.
22, 19 to 20,
sir? 19 to 20.
Then he took a loaf of bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and gave it to them, saying, "This is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." And he did the same with the cup after supper, saying, this cup that is poured out for you is the new covenant in my blood.
So that's what the gospel story, according to our friend, was heading towards. There was much more involved than just the hospitality and the journey and the eating involved in this event that he mentions here. All along the line has been a call to conversion around the meal, a welcoming of sinners, people who have been designated, recognized, or vilified as sinners, the presence of women, the quality of hospitality, and the value of service is all woven in to what he takes here towards the end of the life of Jesus identifies for us as the words of what we have called institution, or the words of the beginning of it. And these are filtered through all the journeys in Luke, the journey of Mary to Elizabeth, the journey of Mary and Joseph to Bethlehem, the journey with the parents to Jerusalem, the journey that is related to his baptism, the journey way up into Galilee, the journey to Nazareth, the journey to Capernaum, and the journey then back down to Jerusalem. Meals and journey, that's what the story is about. And in there, those meals, according to Eugene, are the constant reminder that the flow of the gospel, the gospel story, is that people gather together, and as they do that, they are living out what Jesus has come to accomplish, bringing together the people of God because they are attached to God through the Son, Jesus Christ, and that they are being healed and being equipped for service and then ministry as they go. Let's take a look at that first story. That's Luke 5, 27 to 39. And again, some good centurion or lovely or whatever voice. Luke 5, 27 to 39, please.
I'll read it. I'm loud. After this, he went out and saw a tax collector named Levi sitting at the tax booth, and he said to him, follow me. And he got up, left everything, and followed him. Then Levi gave a great banquet for him in his house, and there was a large crowd of tax collectors and others sitting at the table with them. The Pharisees and their scribes were complaining to his disciples, saying, why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners? Jesus answered, those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. I have come to call not the righteous, but sinners to repentance. Then they said to him, John's disciples, like the disciples of the Pharisees, frequently fast and pray, but your disciples eat and drink. Jesus said to them, you cannot make wedding guests fast while the bridegroom is with them, can you? The days will come when the bridegroom will be taken away from them, and then they will fast in those days. He also told them that he also told them a parable. No one tears a piece from a new garment and sews it on an old garment. Otherwise, the new will be torn, and the piece from the new will not match the old. And no one puts new wine into old wineskins. Otherwise, the new wine will burst the skins and will be spilled, and the skins will be destroyed. But new wine must be put into fresh wineskins, and no one, after drinking old wine, desires new wine, but says, the old is good.
sort of a lengthy story, and it revolves pretty much around outsiders being there. Tax collectors, Levi was one. This is after Levi has been called. And we don't know for sure who Levi was. We assume from the other Gospels that it's Matthew. He isn't identified in the list for Luke, but we assume that it's Matthew. That was another name for Levi. And so this is after he is called, and then he invites Jesus over. And guess what? Invites fellow tax collectors. Gospel as hospitality and as evangelism. Bring in the outsiders so they can get to know his fellow tax collectors, we would say scum of the area, because they were really screwed on both ends, as far as that's concerned. The government was pushing down on them, more money. What you collect last year ain't enough. You get a percentage of it, but it isn't enough. People on the other end said, hey, no way. We're already giving too much. What are you guys doing with it anyway? Look at the way you live. Throw big parties, whatever. So they're scrunched in between and looked down on by both. They were ruffians, roughnecks, the Romans would say. You got to get some of these people to gouge the money out of the other people. And the other people would say, these are really scourges. And so, Jesus identifies with them, brings them in, and goes to eat with them. I have to remember, maybe more than, at least in our day, in our culture, maybe still somewhat, that to eat with someone was to express solidarity with that person. So to eat with a tax collector would be to say, these people are okay. It wasn't just, I came there to visit with them, or I came there to save them. Not in that culture. It is to say they're okay. I've traveled in Central America, and I know how important it was that as part of our travel from the Center for Global Education out of Oxford College, who I think do the best job of getting people to go abroad to learn, how important for us it was to eat with them in their own homes. At that time, El Salvador, for instance, was still coming out of the water. And we traveled by four, we were way up, to celebrate the bringing of water into this community for the first time. They had to carry it over a couple of miles before that. They brought it in. And we were there, and so we could eat in their home. And it was dark, and of course, there was no electricity of any kind. There were no candles. And I went to eat all alone in a home with people I couldn't speak their language. Abysmally monolinguistic. I could get by a little bit in Germany, but not in Germany. I have no idea what I was eating. It was chicken of some kind. It tasted pretty terrible. And I could hardly see the people I was eating with. But that was terrible. I couldn't imagine then, and probably not even now, how critical it was that each of us white folk were with them in what we would call a terribly dirty home, with the animals around us, bumping up against the next chickens, whatever. But that's the way we were expressing our solidarity. And it still bothers me that we're so white here. So okay, we try, that doesn't mean we aren't trying, I'm not putting down. Does that bother you when you go to worship on Sunday? It bothers me. It truly does. Not because, we gotta show up and have a few, sprinkle on a few dark people here or something. We need them, just as we need young people. And let's never forget, just as young people need old people. so that we can come together. My black friend says, hold an eight for us. It's not our place. And when they come up, they don't want to be a dish TV. We've been doing dishes for centuries. And our kids or grandchildren, they can do dishes, but not us. But we miss that, you know? We miss. The first time blacks came up here, you know what they want to do? Let's give the place back to the Indians. Seriously, they weren't kidding. So there's anyway. It wasn't the Forest Service that gave quite a bit later. But we don't, you know, nobody bothering us about that. No, this is our place. We're fixing it up, we're even putting insulation in, all kinds of other stuff. But my grandchildren, we used to ask our kids, if Jesus came to our block, where would he go first? We were wise enough to know that it would be Harold Peters on our block. He never got older than 3, even though he lived to age 19. And he'd say, da, da, that was me, da. Banana, love banana. With a train going by, this 18-year-old kid, ding, ding. Yeah. I'm glad our kids saw that he'd be the first one that Jesus would visit. I'm not setting up priorities in the kingdom, but he does identify with outsiders, what we consider outsiders. When we first took care of Harold, my wife took him to the store. And people would come up and talk about Harold, and she would quickly explain, well, it's not my child, it's somebody else's. Gosh. And when she caught on what she was doing, she was so embarrassed. So that she never again apologized for Harold. He was the child of God. Baptized as well as we did. And later on at Watertown, Wisconsin, after playing outside at age 19, he went into the chapel for worship, put his head down on the pew, and died. And I'd like to have heard the angel choirs. Absolutely. But the outsiders. We gave him a big three-wheel bike. Our kids had a big three-wheel bike. Best thing in the world we ever did was give that to Harold because he could ride a big three-wheel bike. I got pictures of him. Yeah. And the women coming in, that was tough stuff. I don't know if anybody could say that women were lower in esteem in that age than ours, in some places than ours, yeah. But amazing how they were looked down on as just nothing. Even dealing with Mary in some places that comes in, she couldn't possibly be really involved in the birth of Christ. She could only be that tube to which the water passed. Less. Something good be in Mary. Even though God said, blessed are you among women. Even though God said, they'll be calling you blessed forever and ever and ever. We don't want to hear that. Flip it through so that Jesus couldn't be human. So, disreputable Lutherans like us that bring in other disreputable people in a worldview, but only because nobody is disreputable ever since God in Jesus Christ has brought us and forgiven our sin as well as our sins. Or, since again through Paul, we tend to use the juridical model most of the time, you know, paying off the debt or whatever it is, being brought back, the Old Testament idea of being separated in a country far off and being brought back home again. Yeah. Why don't all those older kids come back home? Well, money, I suppose. But also, home is still important. If your kids go to the psychiatrist or psychologist, they don't go because of your neighbors or their school teachers. Mother and dad. The imprint from home is most lasting. I pray God for good, but also sometimes not. So being brought home again, and those people on the outside looking for whatever, is yours? What's the personality of your parish? I love First Lutheran Tacoma, but it's a tough parish. Lovely wood church. It's warm. And I think sometimes the wood brings in more people than the rest of us, because it's warm. We are, what, let's say, 150 feet from the hilltop area in Tacoma, the most mild place in the state of Washington. It's across the street. We have some members there, but not very many. We've got a couple people coming in, but we face west, hilltop disease. We face west. It's our parish. We still all want to change it, and we're not good at it, and we don't know. And so we're giving money to Peace Lutheran Church, which is right in the midst of it, and I'm glad about that. But you, who are the people for you? Go ahead. Anything you want to say.
I'll just say anything.
Sure.
I think the most powerful thing that happens at our church is communion. It overwhelms me. And when pastor says, all are welcome to partake of the meal, it's open, it's inviting. And up there, whether you stand or kneel, or whether he brings the body and blood to someone who can't get up to the railing. And when he says, depart in peace, your sins are forgiven, there is such a feeling, almost a euphoria that takes place, and I love it, and I need it the next week already. But it's warm, it's inviting.
Jesus and his disciples were party goers. Everywhere, it is a party, and it is fun, it is celebration. It does include the forgiveness, for sure. That's our Lord says. But it is also a celebration, you know. That's the word. Rather than institute, I think the word you should be using is the celebration kind of part of it. You know, years ago, and I come from Missouri Synod background, so we're probably some of the greatest organists in the world, from River Forest Concordia, often. And we have a graduate of River Forest back here. Carl Halter, and oh gosh, who's the guy from Wausau, Wisconsin?
Schock.
Pardon?
Carl Schock.
No, not Carl, I know. Yeah. Cousins were right. Well, they were great organists. But early on, they did us in. They're playing all that doggone stuff in minor keys. So we'd all feel pretty bad about going up to the altar. I can remember. I was St. John's Forest Park, doggone. I can tell you where I was sitting and getting that feeling. Oh, boy, I'm not feeling bad enough. Rather than, let it rip, because it has taken place. We're not doing it over again. We're celebrating what Jesus Christ has already done. And therefore, we are equipped for that ministry and mission and everything else, of course. Somebody back to the hand. Good.
I think one of the things that has made a real imprint on our congregation and feeling the warmth and concern and care for each other is the purging, organized that it might be, where one person tells a group of people and then they each send down their prayers to the others to be praying for these people that are dying or in the hospital or having some hard things. Sometimes just being prayed for so-and-so and not saying what it was for.
Sure.
But, you know, you can... or for relatives part a ways, you know, they can be told that I'll put you on our prayer chain. And, this has developed a real care and follow-up concern, and they pray for them until someone has said, will you give a prayer of thanks to, you know, for these things, and it's developed into that kind of thing. And also little things like giving birth dates of people. That has developed a communication back and forth between them. That's a kind of a hospitality too.
Sure.
Or anniversary dates and special occasions for people in congregation. You can do that with a smaller parish.
And especially when that includes the people outside of the parish who are not members, and maybe who even might be some of the parish, I mean, the community or whatever else. Because that's the ones we really need to hear and see too, for sure. Well, yeah. Not the minimum ones, but you, yes.
I can get into this Missouri church now. But on communion, you know, and I grew up with Missouri, I was ALC, around where you couldn't take communion, even I as an ALC person. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you feel about that? When we talk about open to everyone and Dr. Levi's and...
I'm a member of the ELCA, so I certainly agree with what the ELCA does. I think Missouri is struggling about that. I think a lot of its parishes do have open communion.
What's their basis for it? Where do we find that?
I invite you to talk to some of the Missouri people who are here. I just assume not be the teacher of that. But I'd be glad to.
Well, it's always bothered me, you know.
And legitimately, but I think the best way is to talk it through with some people from Missouri. But
we've tried that.
Yeah. Well, I meant here.
Yeah.
But also, I'll talk with you later about it. Don't like for that to be the center of what we're talking about here.
No, but it comes in because it's because
absolutely
you're
legitimate.
Saying everybody, you know, and like she said, in our church too, everybody. And that's, you know, it's your individual thinking and your individual relationship to God, whether you take communion or not, in my thinking.
That's my emphasis, that it is everybody, and then talking about Missouri for me is another thing over here.
Right, yeah, I understand that. Okay. Yeah.
Somebody else?
Yeah. I'm concerned about the model in our century of domestic hospitality, which I think is a dying breed. Mm-hmm. I think our hospitality is done at McDonald's and Burger King and so forth. I taught high school students in family and consumer education, and I would say, now this is a good topic when you go home tonight. Yeah. At the dinner table, talk about this. And they would say, huh? Mm-hmm. And I asked them, how many of you sit down with your family in the evening, and there maybe were three students out of 25 who said they had dinner regularly. I said, how do the rest of you eat? Oh, whenever we get home, we graze the refrigerator. And some of them, so in terms of the idea of hospitality, how are we going to maintain that or retrieve it even in terms of being a way to be fed and nourished?
Well, give me my reaction. It may be the end. We may be barking up all along. It may be different in the future, you know. Gib and I are leaving, please. We're leaving that problem for somebody else. I don't really believe that we're going back. I just don't believe that. I would like to believe that. I would hope for that. I would pray for that. I do. But I would also include the fact that it may not be that. That may have been of a time. It really may not be that way. We're there on email and computer to South Africa and India and all the rest of the stuff. Come back to where I was when I was a kid, just may be impossible. I don't know. But I miss it too, and you know, I covet it for my kids. We got together in South Carolina a couple months ago to celebrate my 75th birthday, but we were all going on airplanes getting out of here again. So I've got a meeting scheduled for 6:30 next week from Thursday in Wenatchee on my way back to Seattle. Isn't that dumb? But, you know, the speed and all that stuff doesn't allow.
I'm also concerned about how, what then will become the meaning of Eucharist. If we saw this as a coming together, being fed and nourished, how can we make the bridge then?
I don't know. My guess is, and my belief is, that God will provide other ways for us to do this. I mean, there will be something. It may not be that way back then, it may not be our way then, but there'll be something. I believe it will be. I don't know what that would be. That's the question. I don't know. But I think your reading is fine. Accurate. Just we don't do it. In my opinion, my daughter and son-in-law, you know, they're shooting off things there, getting soccer. Oh my gosh. Oh, here's soccer and this and all that. They do a lot of fun and celebrating too, but not what we had in the past. So, yeah.
I was thinking of our congregation, which is a fairly new congregation. Mm-hmm. We had a mission developer come in, we're growing, but and he deliberately set out to establish, he wanted the name of the church to be the Family of Faith, which it is. Mm-hmm. And his whole the concept being the family concept, mm-hmm. fellowship and closeness. Now, the whole concept of family is sort of deteriorating in our society, but nevertheless, it seems to be somewhat successful. And the other thing, he's on the cutting edge of new approaches and with respect to contemporary services, as we sometimes call them. And we have a praise team. We have two services. We have a contemporary later service and a more traditional early service. And we get about even number of people in each one. Maybe more at the contemporary because we get more children. It's a young congregation, you know, mid-30s. Just proliferating lots of kids. And but being on the cutting edge of the new approaches, there are dangers that you, well, there are dangers from Synod who's trying to kind of be careful here of what you're doing.
Yep.
And some people who, I don't like that music, mm-hmm. you know, the new way of singing, mm-hmm. the new approach, the more melodic, you know. And I have to admit, at my age, you know, I am more moved by most of the contemporary music, and particularly when it's good gospel-oriented music, but I can bring tears to my eyes, where very seldom has that happened, reading up, singing out of the hymn. I have to admit that. And so I think that it's a new approach. And the idea is to appeal to the broad community, not just Lutherans in the community, but and we are quite, have been able to draw diversely from other all ethnic groups in the area. And I think this is good. So and that's the vision that we have. Now, we don't know, we're only about four years old.
Six.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a struggle.
Sure.
But I'm excited about that approach.
Sure.
And I don't think I could go back to strictly the old traditional Lutheran hymnal service. Mm-hmm. But yet, our pastor, I admire him, he is, he's not a liberal mm-hmm. pastor. Mm-hmm. He is very into the word. We have small group Bible studies throughout the church, which I think are great. We have a telecare ministry. Mm-hmm. We have a prayer warriors, prayer chain type thing. Mm-hmm. And all those things are contributing, and we see the effect and bringing the people in as a community of believers, which I think has to be done. We just can't be individual people coming to a place for an hour on Sunday and then scattering. I mean, there has to be more. Otherwise, the church is dying, which some people think it is anyway. And this is all happening in the Missouri Synod, don't you remember? And our pastor says, we may not be long for this world, you know, as a synod. I mean, there are those people who really hear that.
But as long as your people are talking about that together, you know, the parish is a place where differences of doing things and thinking things and working it out can be there. With respect for one another, you know, come
coming from the Word, of course, but then all the other stuff that the Word doesn't speak about, that that conversation can go on, and then people who say, well, unless we're doing contemporary stuff, it, you know, it really won't work, or others who say, hey, we're going to lose too much, you know, but still, kind of thought, doesn't say that at the end of the meals in Luke, that they all voted and said, well, now we solved that problem, you know. They may have been as more disagreeing, probably so, because Jesus was obnoxious about certain things, you know, obnoxious to the current stuff that people were doing. And so he bothered them. And just as saints today bother us, all the saints that I know have been able to identify bother me. A couple of them are still living, too. So if you don't bother me, you know, when I think of you, you know. Saints are bothersome, I think. So, having those people around us and welcoming them and being willing to learn from them and disagree with them as well. Long ago I started saying, if I go to a church meeting and there isn't some disagreement, I'm terribly disappointed. It probably means not many people have been thinking. And so we need to wake one another up. And I'm hoping out of Eugene's book, we'll wake one another up in maybe a little different way about the hospitality of the Eucharist as well. Tomorrow night, Mary, 6:20 in here. On Thursday, we go back to, I forget which one, Mary Martha, I guess, is that. And glad to talk about that. Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you. Yeah.